Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. Welcome back. Local Hour, Preds Power Hour here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm joined, as I am at this time every single week, on the forechecks. Brian Bastin is here, Renegade of Puck. Brian, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm glad that we're all here and we're back to talk some Preds.
Absolutely. And I'm happy you're here, my friend. Also here over there in Knoxville, Tennessee, right down the street from me, close to me, something like that. I don't know how geography works, but not that far. Charlie Burris of A to Z Sports. Charlie, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
What's up, guys? Glad to be back after a few weeks off. I have had multiple times now where you've messaged me and been like, are you going to drop in here? And then I've hours later been like, I'm sorry, I got caught up at work. So this is good. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, man. We're happy to have you whenever you can make it. It's good. It's fun to talk Preds and also talk about life and Tennessee and all that stuff, because it is everything's cool HQ over here. Everything's good. We're what I always say, and like what we have to say every single week on this podcast, you will not find another podcast on the internet with three UT graduate student alums on the same podcast. You won't find anywhere else. If you want to, your elite Nashville, Tennessee Preds coverage, this is the podcast for you. We love education on this podcast. We love giving the University of Tennessee all of our dollars.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And for the rest of our lives, it feels
too like. Many dollars.
Yeah.
Far too many.
Are either of y'all in the ball club or no?
No.
I do not.
Would it be a conflict of interest for you, Charlie? Are you allowed to join the ball club?
See, I honestly don't know, because like I did. I mean, I think like yesterday I interviewed Grant Freerking, who I don't think he's like employed by them, but he works very closely with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Does it really matter if I'm that ethical? Like, I'm not actually in the, I'm not actually in the media corps. I guess that's the difference. Like, I certainly present my podcast as like I'm a fan who worked in media, mm-hmm, more than I am media now. So like,
you are media. You're more media than me. I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
A to Z Sports. That's pretty media.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, I guess I am. But like, yeah, I think about that. Like, I do interview somebody like that, and if I was giving to their business and interviewing them in any kind of like a serious way, maybe that would be a conflict of interest. I don't know. But no, I just don't, because I it just doesn't. I love it kind of outside looking in more than being involved in that type of stuff, maybe. But that's just me.
Well, there you go. I don't know if I'll ever join it. I don't know. Part of me is like, that's nice. It'd be cool to be in.
They've taken enough from you.
They really have. But
I love it conceptually. Like,
yeah,
that's where college sports is going, where it's like you can pay the players, but they haven't. The thing that gets me is the transparency. They're just like, everything but 10% goes to the athletes. And I'm like, I'm gonna need a little more information than that. That's where I get caught up with a lot of it. But
yeah,
maybe that's just me.
Well, you know who got caught up in a whole kind of mess last night? The Nashville Predators. Jordan Binnington started for the St. Louis Blues in the net, and it did not go well. 5 goals given up by the Preds, who fall to 21-18-6 as of this recording. Charlie, Brian and I have said for the last few weeks, it's just, this is how the season's going to go, where you're going to go a little bit over 500, then you're going to go a little bit under 500. And you're not going to shake things up all that much. And you're just maybe going to squeak into the playoffs. We'll see. The division's pretty weak, top to bottom. That's just about where they are. Like, the Blues are kind of in that same zone at 23-20-3. They're having a similar type season. But bad loss last night for the Preds in St. Louis. They are now 6th in the Central. But, you know. The Preds season's not going awry. They have some big wins over Calgary and Columbus. I don't know. It's just, it's so funny that we've probably a month and a half now just been like, well, we know they're not going to turn the corner and win 12 straight. And we also know that they're not going to fall off completely and lose 12 straight. This is kind of where they're at. They know exactly who they are as a team, but Brian, we'll start positively. What went right in the wins over Calgary and Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, I covered both those games Monday and Tuesday, and I saw a lot of good things from the team. Actually, a lot better than I expected. I know that the score, excuse me, was just 2-1 in both of those games, and that they were, again, kind of, you know, supported by just outstanding goaltending by both Saros and Lankanen. But what I was seeing a lot of is, and this is probably the best 2-game stretch I can remember in 3.5 years of coverage, is they were fantastic with their shot quality. If you look at the heat maps of where they're taking shots, I mean, it's just one single big red blob right in front of the net. And that's something that I've screamed about for years, just because I'm a huge nerd. But, you know, it's obviously, you know, you have a higher chance of making a goal if you're closer to the goal. Just, you know, common sense type things. I know analytics can be tough, but, you know, and that's what they did extremely well. They're the forechecking and the style of offense that they play worked extremely well against Calgary, who I thought was a little bit better of a team than they currently are. But, you know, Johnny Gaudreau and those guys, you know, they added him. There's Patrick Laine in there and just completely neutralized them. And I'll give John Hines credit in that Calgary game. I think it was his game plan that won that game, because, I mean, he put the fourth line and he said, you guys are covering Gaudreau and Laine. That's what you know, Cole Smith and Tanner Janot and all them. And they did it great. You know, we saw the Forsberg and Duchesne line do great. We've had, you know, there's been different scores each time. And so in both of those games, obviously Calgary is a team that is, I think, either right above them or right below them at this point. They're above them now by 3 points, you know, and that was good. But Columbus was a team that is, they're just awful. I mean, I think they're the worst team they might be the worst team now, or did they get, let's see, they're at what, 28 points. Chicago's at 30. So yeah, Columbus is the worst team in the NHL.
But that's what they knew was going to happen. It feels like forever ago they made all those big moves at the deadline, but they like went win now. People were like, are you sure you want to win now, right now? Are you sure you feel good about this? And then they did, and it didn't win, and now they're paying they're paying the cost.
Yeah, but so you always got to pay the cost somehow. Yeah. You're going to pay, it comes due, the bill comes due no matter what. And so, yeah. I mean, it was good. And if you look at this month for Nashville, they started off 4 wins in a row. You know, they beat Montreal, Carolina, Washington, Ottawa. Then they lost to Toronto and Montreal. Then they and then lost to Buffalo. So that's 4 wins, then 3 losses, then 2 wins, and then a bad loss. And so it's, again, like you said, it's, this team has bounced up and down over 500. Looking at Micah McCurdy's on hockeyviz.com, his playoff projections, you know, Nashville started about here. They went up to where it was, you know, the projection was. It dipped way back down and then kind of got back up to the same level it started at until yesterday. Then it dipped back down. So it's just like, that's the kind of team it is. And, you know, give UC Saros and Kevin Lankinen credit. Again, first off, Kevin Lankinen, I'm sorry I doubted you. I'm sorry I said that Connor Ingram would have been a better choice. He may be. I don't know. It's hard to judge because he's in Arizona. But Kevin Lankinen's been fantastic. You know, but as we saw last night, you can't rely on your goaltender having to be lights out every single game. You just can't do it. You know, it's like relying on a kicker to, like, you know, and as a Cowboys fan, I know the irony in saying this. It's like relying on a kicker to, you know, he's going to be the difference for us. Like, all we got to do is stay within 3 points and he'll end it for us. Like, no, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that with a goaltender. I'm personally a little bit worried about the workload UC Saros has. I think he's got, what, 30-something games now? Let's see. Let me look here, because it's he's played 34 and Nashville has played 45 games. Like, that's not... it's not sustainable. Even if he is fine and healthy and makes it through, like, you don't want to run him into the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's rough, but it's just, if the team is not built to keep up with certain other teams, it's just not. And that's okay, because, you know, not only one team wins the cup every year, you know, for 31 teams, they did not achieve their goal that season. And so, you know, you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, but the team has been so up and down, and they've been one of the most injury-free teams in the league. I mean, Mark Borowiecki is the main injury that's left. I mean, and, you know, that's not like that's a third pairing, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a big deal. So it's not like injuries can be the where you can put blame. It's just the team isn't as good.
There were like three things this week that made me I don't want to say a new perspective, almost a defeatist perspective with this hockey team. One was, and this has been a headline all season long, in good wins, so often it's like, UC Saros makes 4,000 saves, and then the Predators win. I mean, it was in back-to-back games, like that Blue Jackets game and the Calgary game. It was like Lankinen and Saros are just standing on their head. And then I saw, I think it was a Tennessean or Athletic or something, somebody wrote an article that was like, the Predators are now leaning on or leaning into Cody Glass and Juuso Parsonen. And I was like, that's not great. Like, it's cool. I mean, I'm glad that sort of these out of nowhere dudes are having nice seasons and whatever, playing well. But, you know, like, you have Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and like all it's Matt Duchene, all these dudes on this team, and there's no article about them just being like they're playing out of their mind and having the best season ever. And then I think the final thing was, I've been watching the Grizzlies a lot lately, one of the other pro franchises from the state of Tennessee, and you look at that Grizzlies team, Ja Morant, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson, all these dudes, obviously John Moran. I mean, he's probably going to win MVP in the league this year. And you go like, that's a team that can win a championship. That's a championship winning team. They play to this level. They play to that level every single night. They play to that level almost when it looks effortless. Like they, and like they can even have bad games and they win games. And you just look at the Predators right now and you just go,
I mean, look at the Bruins. The Bruins, they've got 9 losses total. 4 of them are in overtime. They're 36-5-4. I mean, that's
wild.
Unbelievable. Yeah. No, it's the Bruins, not the Wild. That's Minnesota.
Sorry, why? I mean,
No, I know. I'm just messing with you. Sorry. Yes. That's one of my favorite dumb jokes.
But it's also the scoring. I mean, look at who's leading the Central right now. It's the Stars, who have kicked the crap out of Nashville every time they play them. And what is the biggest reason why? I mean, their offense is top-notch. They have 163 goals. The Preds right now at 124.
Jason Robertson.
But all of those things, I mean, it was those three elements just looking where I was just like, can we just tank? Like, can we just...
They're not
I know.
Tanking. Charlie, you need to sell that dream. It's not, it's not happening.
And of course, I saw... I don't know if it was Sean Smith or somebody. I saw maybe it was Brian tweeting about it. I don't know this week, but they were... I don't know who it was. Anyway, somebody was saying like the reason that they're not going to do that is because that will mean almost certainly the end of John Hines, and then also almost definitely the end of David Poile, and David Poyle's just not, he's not going to play that. And that's not the way that he's going to go out. And I get
it. He puts all his chips in at some point where he's like, this is my last year or two doing this. I'm just I'm going for it. Like, I don't know who that is, but I think it ends with him going all in. And then,
but he may not have a choice, you know, soon. So it's going to be, it'll be very, very interesting. It's going to be really, it's going to be something to watch, but it's just, I mean, like looking at, if you look on, look at some advanced stats with this team, you look at like goals above replacement, basically. So basically like how good is this player, you know, versus your average like 13th forward or your seventh defenseman, basically. And the large majority of the team is within like -2 to +2, which is not, I mean, the leader on the team is Philip Forsberg, 7.1. But if you look at, you know, compare it to the league, let's see here. Jack Hughes, 17.4. Mark Stone, 17.3. Like, they've got some good players, but even Roman Josi is you know, 5.4. He's not even close to being in the top five for defensemen. I mean, I think goalies are maybe the only, like, difference maker. I think Juuse Saros, I know he's second in the league in goals saved above expected. He's second in goals above replacement. I mean, he's having almost a better year than the year that Pekka won the Vezina. So it'll be, I think it's going to be a three-man race between Sorokin, Saros, and Hellebuck, but you can't rely on just that. You just can't do it. And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes from here, because there's guys like Forsberg now and Duchesne and, Roman Josi. Those guys have contracts that can't be moved. Which is fine, because you can build a team around that. You can still go through the rebuilding process with that, but you know, then you start to look at guys like Ryan Johansson. You know, he's got one more year, I think, left in his contract. Two more years. Wow. You know, there's Mikael Granlund, who's not had a great year, which I think if Nashville moves anybody big, it's probably going to be Granlund. That's just my guess right now, the feeling I've got. So it's hard, because you've got a team that is built to be a team that can compete, but they're not doing it. And so at some point it's just like, well, it's going to get worse. And, you know, attendance is down across the league. I mean, before COVID, you know, Nashville had this record of however many sellouts, I mean, in the hundreds, you know, and no team has really recovered from that yet. But, you know, they know that putting out a team that's this bad right now. I mean, Columbus just got booed off the ice last night from what I heard. So, you know, it's one of those, because again, they really, fans showing up in the seats is the biggest thing. And so I think a tanking team, people aren't going to do it. And so, you know, but I don't know. It's hard. I mean, it's a team that can go in and can play the same way and win some games and beat teams they shouldn't. And then they come into a team that they've already beaten, which I think they've already beaten. I think they've beaten St. Louis. St. Louis beat them in overtime. So I missed that one. And I thought they'd beat them earlier in the season. Yeah, they beat them 6-2 at the very beginning of the season. So, I mean, this is a team they should be able to compete with, because Jordan Binnington's a punk. And so, you know, it's one of those. But then you come and see, and it's like, no, this the way that last night went was just not good. I mean, T.S. Ekholm and Colton Sissons, like, that's not who you want your goals to come from. You know, that should be your top guys. It should be Philip Forsberg. It should be Ryan Johansson. It should be Matt Duchesne. You know, and so it's really rough. It's really rough. And then you hear talk, you know, they're like, well, Nashville has talked to Vancouver about Bo Horvat, which he's a good player.
But no one
even
knows what Vancouver's doing. Like, what is Vancouver doing? What is a Vancouver Canuck?
They're just desserts for being a crappy organization in this offseason. That's all I'll say about that. So just like Philadelphia, which, you know, they've had their whole thing being in the news.
Yeah, just a normal week all across the board. And
doesn't exist in the NHL, buddy. I'm sorry.
No, it does not. And also when you look at it too, like from the Columbus aspect of it, like where do they even go? Like there's no path for them to be competent for a while.
Their path just says in big shining letters, says Connor Bedard, and the kid's good. Yeah. So that's what it is. Again, it's going to be funny though, because, you know, it's a lottery. So they could have this awful season and then get the ninth pick in the draft. And
who'd be the funniest lottery winner?
The funniest, let me take a look at the bottom 10 right now, and I can tell you that. I would say the worst would be Chicago. Absolute worst. I would hate it. It would make me very upset. So yeah, that would be by far the worst.
The NHL steps in if it's the Coyotes, where they're like, no, 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 we're not doing this. No.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, is that, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nashville is 12th worst, so we're getting there.
Of course. That's going to be the most Nashville thing. They're going to miss it by like one or two spots. Like, it's just...
I think the funniest would be... Shoot, I don't know. I think maybe San Jose or Anaheim. I think one of those two. But
let's say if Nashville did win it, who do you think they would take?
Like first?
Yeah.
If they won, Bedard. It's Bedard with that.
There's
question.
No chance that they would go anybody but Bedard.
No. Oh, no, no, no. If they did, they should. If they did something else, they should fold the entire franchise. I mean, the kid's good. And it's so hard. And it's one of the things that I really struggled with when I started with this sport is like, oh, yeah, here's the draft. Cool. Here's these guys. Mm. We're not going to see them for 4 years. They're going to be in Europe or they're going to be in Russia. And then they're going to be in the AHL maybe. And then, you know, and so it's hard to kind of do that because you're like, these guys, Connor Bedard is absolutely day one, makes the team out of camp and is, you know, starting second line.
Did Jack Hughes make it right away?
I believe so, yes.
That's what I thought. Okay, yeah. So it's Jack Hughes. Who else has done it?
Alex Lafreniere, Rasmus Dahlin.
The Rangers guy who went two did right away, right?
I believe so, yeah.
What is his name? I'm blanking on his name. They both... They went back and forth the whole year where it was like, who's going to go number one? Who's going to go number two between those two?
Yeah, let's see here. Year was Slavoski from he was in Finland. I think he's from Czech Republic. Let me take a look at the year before that. Owen Power was number one in 2021, which I forgot about that. Alex Lafreniere and Quentin Byfield. Byfield started. Tim Stützle, this is in 2020. Tim Stützle for Ottawa. He's been playing. Lucas Raymond, I think he only played a little bit in the A. I mean, these are guys. Alexander Holt. We've seen now the debut of Yaroslav Askarov once. And so, I mean, these are guys that you have to get a top 10 guy if you want him to immediately contribute. And he may not even be good. Lafreniere had a really rough. Kaapo Kakko had a really rough rookie year, but you know, that's the kind of guy that you can get in there. I mean, if you honestly looking at it, I mean, the fact that Juuso Parsonen is a full-time starter now still blows my mind because this guy's seventh round pick. I think it's kind of crazy to see, you know, who makes it in while we've got Philip Tomasino still trying to get out of the AHL. Luke Evangelista, another first round pick, still trying to get out of the NHL or AHL. I mean, so, I mean, it's really interesting. Juuso Parsonen, he still blows my mind that he's where he's at. 2019 seventh round pick. It's awesome. It's great. It's fantastic. And again, all credit to Eric Dene from On the Forecheck, who loved the dude from the minute they drafted him. So it's interesting. I mean, and that's the thing is you can market this team if it's bad. You can market this team as here's these young guys. Come see them play. Come see them develop. Come get a glimpse of the future. The team's going to be a little bit rough, but let's cut some ticket prices. Let's do some more gimmicky, you know, nights, fan nights and things like that. And, you know, like they're doing these college nights, which I thought was pretty cool until they found out that you had to buy these tickets through your school's alumni association, because I 100% covered that game because I wanted an orange Predators hat with a power T on it. Nope, had to pay through the alumni association, and so didn't get that.
People ask, like, this is a Preds hat, by the way, and it's good company, like the Smashville, and I love that, but they're always like, what is that? And I'm like, come on, what are we doing? What are we doing? What do you think this means? What are we doing? People ask all the time.
But it's gonna be rough because the rest of this month for Nashville.
Hold on, you got the Kings, and where else are they going?
They got the Kings. They have, hold on one second. I just closed that for whatever reason, which was stupid of me. But they've got the Kings, which, you know, they've got Victor Arvidsson, Kevin Fiala. You know, they've got Anze Kopitar still. But yeah, so it's LA at home. Then Tuesday is Winnipeg, which Winnipeg is turning in very quickly into a very, very good team. Counter Hellebuck's having one heck of a year as well. And then one of the hottest teams in the league, again, is the New Jersey Devils, which somehow they beat last time they played. So You know, it's not going to get easier. They've got all-star break after that, which the only all-star they're sending is UC Saros, which seems fitting. Mm-hmm. And then there's after all-star, Vegas at home, at Philadelphia, Arizona, then Boston, then Florida, then Minnesota, then Vancouver. I mean, that's February, and it just gets worse. I mean, there's a ton of good teams left for Nashville to play against, and it's just going to be incredibly rough to see. And so, you know, this month, again, it's gone on the surface, what, four wins, then three losses, then two wins, then a loss. So, I mean, they're coming out ahead slightly for the month of January, but there's no consistency, you know, and almost every single win has been this part of it looked good, but UC Saros. That's basically what it is. It's this, but UC Saros. And, you know, again, you don't want to run him into the ground, but you also don't, you know, people are saying like, oh, he gave up five goals last night. They should pull him, you know, and it's like, yeah, they should pull him because he shouldn't have to deal with this right now. Like it's one of those things where he's just like, I can't carry you guys every single game, you know? And so, I'll give players credit that after a bad game like that, they almost always are like, yeah, we all apologize to UC for this game. Like, this isn't on him at all. So at least they realize that, but the Nashville's going to have to make a decision, and they're going to have to make a decision very soon with the trade deadline coming up as what are they going to do about this season? Are they going to foolishly go out and go try and snag somebody like Bo Horvat or Brock Besser? Like, no, they shouldn't, because it's just, that's not going to help them get any better. Should they try to unload a Mikael Granlin? Should they try to, I mean, at this point, if they're not going to play Philip Tomasino, you know, it's one of those. And so it's going to be very interesting, but these are guys that are, you know, playing for their jobs, not playing for their jobs, coaching or GMing for their jobs. And so I don't know. I think, you know, the writing is on the wall. I think yesterday, Elliot Friedman said like, Nashville can't continue to do what they're doing, is to scrape into the playoffs and just do fine and then get knocked out, you know. And when a guy like Elliot Friedman
Boyle's over that, here like, oh yeah, really, you don't think me. We can keep doing this, you yeah. are you sure you don't think we can keep running this
like
back
that, it's like that TikTok with Usher when he's like, watch this.
That's exactly, yeah, that's 100% what Dave Boyle's doing every year.
Yeah, and so it's just it's rough. It's a watch rough this. Way to go, exactly. And so I don't know. It's hard, especially as a fan, because you don't want to watch these games that they're doing, because like, you're expecting with this team is telling you that they're all in to try to win.
Mm.
It's one thing to do that. And it's one thing to be like, hey, this year's going to suck. We're really sorry, but it's going to make things better in the long run. And they're just pushing it back. And honestly, if they keep pushing it back, they're just going to make that rebuild period longer, you know, unless they can do something that, you know, changes how things go. It's just, it's not well. And I feel you know, it's hard for fans. It's hard for people covering, you know, just to be like, we don't want to write the same story. We don't want to sit there and point at the same things and say, this is the problem, but this is the problem. And we're going to have to write this, you know, 20 more times this season. So,
yeah, what they're doing is just the worst of all worlds, because you, at least if you tank, you know that there is intention behind it to build back up, to be better, to the hope springs eternal in a situation like that. If you're really great, obviously you're really great, that's awesome. But this middle ground where they're just stuck in, just trudging uphill, sliding back down, trudging uphill, sliding back down, is, I mean, it's just the worst thing. It's the worst thing for the media covering the team. It's the worst thing for the fans watching the games, because who wants to watch that? There's really no motivation, because you know it doesn't really lead to anything spectacular. And I don't get it. Like, as far as it goes from management, and I specifically look to like ownership of this team, like, all you have to do is look across the river at Amy Adams Strunk. The lady got fed up, and she said no more and fired the GM and said, we're not doing this. And like, and they need, at a certain point, in my personal opinion, that point passed a year ago, frankly, but
yeah,
at a certain point, I mean, they got to get a backbone and just go, no, this is over. We're not doing
it. I mean, it has to be Haslam who steps in. The other Haslam.
Surely it doesn't take that long, though, right? I mean, it's because he's not taking over for a minute.
I mean, it's what? Next year or the year after, Brian?
I think he is minority right now. But I think it's going to transition over the next couple of years for him to kind of take over. So
I don't know. It probably has to be signed on from him, right? Well, that's just a weird spot to be in, like a transition of power like this where he's the minority owner and like what they do there. And then you have to run it by Baby Poyle with Dad Poyle and see.
I mean, they don't have to run anything by any of them, thankfully. But I mean, but and it's, I will bring this up because this is something, a conversation I had with somebody, and they brought up the good point about, like, you know, tanking. Like, you know, we were just talking about, you know, Columbus could be just abnormally bad and have, you know, finish with like 40 points on the season, but still get the 10th pick depending on how the lottery goes, which allows me to bring up one of my favorite pet things that I've heard, and I champion this every year, is instead of doing a lottery system, do something called like a gold draft. I don't know if you guys have ever heard about this. I know Micah McCurdy, again, I bring him up again, he's kind of pioneered this with hockey, but basically the idea is that at any point in the season, a team that is bad, so let's say Columbus, if they are officially knocked out of playoff contention, their clock starts there. And so as a team gets knocked out of playoff contention, or they tell the league, we're bad, we're not going to make the playoffs, and so we're going to go ahead and declare this, from that point on, the team that has the most points, who earns the most points from that point on, then gets like the higher draft pick. And so Columbus, they may declare really early, and so they may have 20 games for them to accumulate points, whereas Nashville may not get eliminated until four games out, so they have four games to accumulate points. So you don't have teams tanking and losing, but you also have these teams that when they, once they do get knocked out of playoff contention, all of a sudden it's like the playoffs for them, because they're trying to win as many games as they can because they're trying to get a better draft spot. And you know, it doesn't, that would be cool. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, like bad teams, you think, well, they're not going to get points because they're bad, but that just means they've got longer to accumulate points. You know, like you can outpace Nashville if the best Nashville can do is 8 points and you've got 20 games, like you just got to win four, you know? And I also like the idea of letting teams be like, hey, we're not officially out, but we want to start right now. You know, so I think that kind of thing, because, you know, a lot of people say tanking is not great, like nobody wants to watch it, but that's a plan that a team like Nashville, if they're rebuilding, that puts people in the seats again in April. That puts people in the seats in March, because you're trying to see them win, because you want them to win to get it. Instead of, you see fans like Chicago and Columbus fans seeing their team winning and going, crap, stop doing that. Don't do that. Like, you need to lose, you know? And so I think that's one of those things that will probably never, ever happen. But, you know, people say like, well, they don't want to tank because no one's going to want to see them. Well, there's ways to fix that. And there's ways to fix the draft thing. And there's a way to make the end of the season exciting for teams. You know, you look at it in like with the playoffs, with the NFL, you know, when teams are resting all their starters and stuff, like nobody wants to see that, especially if you're a fan, you're like waiting for so long to see this team, you know, play. Like, if I would have gone to the Tennessee Titans and Dallas game, you know, Dallas was still playing for something back then, but like Tennessee technically really wasn't, you know, and it showed. And I'd be pissed if that was the only Titans game I got to see if I was a Titans fan. So, you know, it's a business thing, I think, that's keeping this team where it's at. But it's not going to last. And every year it keeps happening this way, the fan base is getting more and more disgruntled with it, and they're going to start to see the reaction from it. You know, people can deal with a team that they know is going to be bad, but to be told a team's going to be good again and then not be good, that's harder.
Go Preds.
Go Preds, right?
Go Preds, man. Everything's great. It's also the last thing I'll say on the tanking stuff. That what's different about hockey and tanking, it's like when you have a good goalie, you just are like, this, that's just it's immoral. Like, you, it's so unethical to put you see through that, where you're like, this dude's giving it all and you want to tank, you want to make this guy just deal with slop for the rest of it. Like, that's not fair. You have to pull him too, like either trade him or pull him, because it's not fair. Like, goalies and tanking is not fair when you have a good one. Like, what Gibson's had to deal with for years in Anaheim is a felony. It should be illegal what that man has had to deal with year over year in Anaheim. But
at the same
time,
he's kind of playing like a like backup quarterback role, where it's like he can kind of just stink, and you know, it's not like he's going to get fired.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Well, Brian, what can the good folks check out from you across the internet this week?
As always, I will be doing the post-game videos for Renegades of Puck. So
a lot of the good stat of the week stuff. I love checking that out after the game.
Yeah, it's really great. It's been fun this season, especially when you know, I get to do it in coordination with a stat that I worked with Willie on for the broadcast. That's been really fun to do, and I've really enjoyed doing that. On the forecheck, you should still be able to find anything we're working on right now. If you haven't heard, we've just found out this morning that SB Nation Vox Media is going to be demonetizing a large majority of the websites, especially in hockey. I think MLS is also getting completely demonetized, which means that the site will still exist, but nobody is getting paid anymore, which is rough. You know, for people like me, a lot of the part-time contributors, this is our side job. And so it's we're going to be okay. But for people like our site manager, Kate, the head of all SB Nation hockey, Steph Driver, they got laid off. And this was their primary income. This was their job. And it's rough. It's hard to deal with this type of thing. Again, I'm very, very privileged and lucky that I've got, you know, it's not my primary source of income. But I feel more, I think, just for them and for the fans, because, you know, we haven't had an athletic writer for so long. Now that, you know, we don't know what the future holds for us as far as how long we can continue to do it, how long the team will still want to do it. Because honestly, if somebody wants to go off and go get paid, I'm going to write them a reference letter. You know, it's no problem. So as of right now, we're still alive, and they can pry my hockey coverage and my graphs and my stats from my cold, dead hands. If they want to let me continue writing on that website with the URL, I'll be there. If not, I'll let you guys know. But just know that, you know, they've tried to take the team from us in years past. They're trying to take coverage from us. Screw them. So please, you know, if reach out to people who've been affected by this. I'm fine. Thank you for all the kind words I've already gotten. But for other people, you know, go out there and support the writers and the people that you see, the people who are creating content that you read. Especially for people covering things like women's hockey, who it's just a small, small percentage of a fan base. But, you know, go out there and support those people, because as you guys know, sports media is a very, very rough and scary landscape to find yourself in. And a lot of us have to do two or three jobs to be able to continue to do this type of thing. So support the people that you care about, the people you enjoy. They always appreciate it. And you know, again, I'm still doing what I'm doing. I don't plan on changing what I'm doing. I just might be a little bit more cynical about it.
Coming over to my lane.
Yeah.
Cynicism. I mean, just to drop in on that, I worked for SB Nation for a time. It's where I got my start. And just to say, we were saying this before we got on here, but the way that Vox Media has fumbled one of the greatest lineups in the history of sports media covering the last decade. I mean, this is a long time coming and a lot of different people. The way they fumbled that is just unbelievable. Like, the mismanagement there has been incredible. If there's anything tough going on financially there, I assume there is with layoffs. I mean, they deserve it. And I don't want to say that. I don't mean that in like people deserve to lose.
No, I know what you're saying.
But they are reaping what they've sowed there, and it's a damn shame. So,
and if you're the NHL right now, I mean, and you're looking that there's a lot of teams that don't have an NHL writer for the Athletic. The entire SB Nation network is demonetizing hockey coverage. That's not a good look for the NHL either.
Yeah.
Now, granted, for the NHL, they're probably not thinking it that way. They're probably thinking, good, we can get all of our old men newspaper writers back, and that's all that will matter. But, you know, it's not good business for the NHL too. And they honestly should be taking a look at, like, that's what they're deciding to do, is like, that's not a good look for them. You know, it's not, it definitely isn't. And so we'll see. But, you know, I do this because I love it. I didn't go to journalism school. I don't have an ounce of journalism in my body. I can't speak or write English very good. But it's been a dream to be able to do this. And so, you know, I'm very thankful for the time, you know, with SBN. You know, again, when I started, I was just like, I'm just telling people that I work with Spencer Hall. That's all I care about. Like, he's my coworker technically. But that obviously that's not true.
Yeah, Bomani Jones just doing YouTube shorts for them like 8 years ago. Where you're like, what? Like, I just, like Charlie said, there's just so many talented folks all across the board, hockey, soccer. I mean, just they had that local coverage where it was like SB Nation Atlanta, SB Nation New York, and you had all these, like, it was just so big. And we were like, you were just every day, it was the first thing I was checking every single day was like, oh, all these new writers that I want to read. That's been the saddest thing, I think, in blogging over the last couple of years, is like, just there's so many podcasts now, and blogging has taken the hit where like everybody is starting those shows. And I want to, and I feel bad being like the person of like, hey, stop creating these podcasts. I would much rather read you. We've got enough. Where we have a dearth of options right now is what to read. Like Nashville, there's so many people that want to read Predators coverage that like there has to be a way to financially make this work, because it's a big fan base, obviously. And people want to read it, and there's people love reading smart stuff. That's what SB Nation has always excelled in, is just smart sports writing that you would not get from a local newspaper. Like, that was the big difference. It was just different kind of writing that was just a joy and a treat to read. Like the Sunday shoot around with Paul Flannery in the NBA season was always one of my favorites. It was beautifully done. It was like awesome graphics, and it was just, it's great. And you're like, oh, this is like a modern newspaper almost, the way they outlined everything. And like Charlie said, fumbled the bag. I hope for the best for everybody involved in what's going on today. But you know, it just sucks. And like you said, it's just the nature of where we're at and sports media and just media in general. It's just day to day, you're always walking on eggshells, and that just sucks, because there should be a way to make all of this work. There should be. We shouldn't all have to go do our own Substack to make this work.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, you know, in a perfect world, a lot of us, especially some of the really great writers we have on our team, like, they should be doing this full time. You know, there are several people I know on the team that should be a full-time writer covering a team because they're that good.
Yeah.
And it's they're not, but they're doing it for because they love to do it. And that's a lot, that's the case for a lot of people, but that puts a lot of people in a risky financial. I mean, one of the things, my favorite things I ever saw was a tweet that says, you know, a lot of us have, you know, a lot of people when they're writers and stuff like that, you know, they meet each other and stuff, and they say, hey, my name's so and so, I'm a writer, and this is so and so, this is my wife, this is my insurance, this is my insurance coverage, you know. Like that's just kind of how it goes, you know. It's just really, no, I apologize. Didn't mean to bring it down. I think I brought it down a lot of the time with it.
No, this is real.
That's also, you know, Nashville had a choice. They didn't have to have me bring this part of the show.
I was going
to
say, you didn't bring this down. This is not, you didn't make this call. This was not a you thing. And all the good folks who are part of the layoffs and everything going on today, it's for lack of a better word, it's just shitty. And hope for the best. And that everybody lands on their feet and that things get turned around. That's all you can hope for.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing too, is like, you know, if something happens to where like the site doesn't exist anymore or something like that, you're never going to get rid of me, Chase. So you're stuck now, buddy.
I'm okay with that. Charlie, Brian, thank you as always. And I will talk to y'all next week.
Next Friday. See ya.
All right, welcome back, Atlanta Sports guys, here on a Friday afternoon where everything is great in Atlanta sports. And by everything's great, Atlanta United fans really going through it this week. You know, Joseph Martinez, my family, diehard Atlanta United folks, really, really struggling with the direction. And my dad's already been down in the dumps for years now with Miguel Almiron being gone. Like, that was his dude. Any conversation you get into with my father about soccer, he played college soccer at University of North Georgia, so he's a big soccer guy, and he he just was so upset. And Almiron was his dude. Like, he was all in on Almiron. It hasn't been the same since he left, and now Joseph Martinez following him out, and he goes to Inter Milan, and man, what a rough situation for Atlanta United fans. They have never been this down in the dumps. It's kind of staggering to think about how far they've fallen from how it started versus how it's going right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's going down to Inter Miami, and he's gonna.
I mean,
Inter Miami.
I think I said Milan.
Yeah, you said Milan. I was like, it's fine. I wasn't gonna correct you. No, I know what you meant. But he was. It was to the point. He wasn't the same guy post knee injury. It just, it wasn't working. And he's too expensive and taking up too important of a spot as a designated player. They have only three of those positions. and he's making a lot of money, and he deserved that money. Don't take that the wrong way, but he's kind of coming off the bench. He just wasn't producing in that same level post-knee injury, and I think Atlanta United is going to be better for this move. It's a difficult move, but they're going to be better for it. I have a positive long-term outlook for Atlanta United, just because we have new management coming in. Was the his name escapes me off the top of my head, but he's the old general manager of the Seattle Sounders and Sporting KC and everything else. He brings titles to town and he puts together winning products. And I think this is the best situation he's ever been in. He hasn't had pockets this deep in his entire MLS career, and he still won championships. So I'm optimistic for the long term of what this team and this product is going to be on the soccer pitch. But, you know, it still sucks losing a guy like Joseph Martinez, a guy who meant so much to the city, a guy who really helped birth soccer culture in this city in a meaningful way. So it's going to hurt at first, and then the team is going to be better for it. It's kind of been trending away from him anyway, so it was the necessary divorce that happens with every athlete, seemingly. So sucks for now, but it will be fine.
Yeah, we'll see what ultimately happens going into next year, but I guess fingers crossed is all we can do.
Make the playoffs, man. They've missed the playoffs two of the last 3 years.
Also, I mean, very interested to see how it goes being only on Apple TV for a full year. Like, all MLS is Apple TV, so I'm very curious to see what that looks like.
Are they going
to
have regional coverage on Apple TV? Is that...
That I'm not sure, but it's
I'm
going to
be a little PO'd if I can't watch Atlanta United matches.
No, it's like everybody's on it. So you can watch. I don't think there's any blackout rules or anything. So you'll be able to do that. But
like
it's
Sunday ticket style?
Yes. But only, imagine it's just only Sunday ticket. That's the only way you could watch the NFL. That's what this is. Like every single match is only on Apple TV. And it's twice a week. They have a set schedule, which is also a big thing.
Well, when they buy, that part's awesome. Part's awesome. The worst thing is when because I'm a season ticket holder for Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that comes is when it's just a random Thursday or a Tuesday or some random day. It's like, oh, there's a home match today.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, they got rid of that. That was terrible. Like,
awful.
You would just be like,
awful.
Are they on right now? Does Atlanta not have a game right? What?
One of the best parts about the NFL, Major League Baseball, it's happening every day. You just assume it's on unless it's not. College football, every single Saturday. NFL football, every single Thursday, every single Sunday, on Monday night. It's consistent. MLS, it's shooting itself in the foot. It's just one of the necessary things. I mean, they have to, they're always dodging NFL and MLB and everything else. So I get why they're doing what they're doing. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you have to stake your claim at some point. Like, this is, you're going to have your market and you have to appeal to that market and you have to serve that market. And I don't think they were doing that with the previous model. But I think once Apple TV, I've heard rumors that they're dabbling in EPL soccer as well. And I think if they bring in the EPL and they're able to combine that package with MLS soccer, that'll expand the reach and the more watchability, or at least eyeballs on the sport. I think that's good. I mean, MLS soccer is still a decade away, I'd say, before they actually like compete on a global scale, even in like a micro scale. But we'll see.
The only thing to compete is like when they start getting guys in their prime. Like, that's just it. Like, you have
to
start.
I think they're starting to. I think they're starting to do that with a number of programs. Inter Miami's about to go get Leo Messi and
like Christian Pulisic not being overseas is like something you got to get. Like, that cannot happen anymore. Like, your best American-born player.
Well, that was the big thing with Jurgen Klinsmann too. Like, Jurgen Klinsmann turning over to Bruce Arena. Like, everyone was talking like, oh, you have to. All American players have to play American soccer. He's like, no, I want them to go play in Europe because I'm trying to win. And if you want to win, like right now, which is what he was trying to do, got to play European soccer. So
yeah,
we'll see. It's part of the. But on the flip side, it's like, oh no, we have to grow this product domestically, and it's a little bit of give and take, I think. But you know, I think MLS soccer it's on the uptick and it's still growing. And I think by the time we're media savants in our mid-50s, MLS soccer is going to be a much bigger deal than it is right now. But we'll see.
For sure. Speaking of we'll see, the Falcons' next defensive coordinator, Garrett Chapman. A lot of interest in this role. A lot of people being rumored Cody Woodruff or Corey Woodruff of the Falcoholic did a really good piece outlining all the different choices that they could go in. You could obviously promote from within with Frank Bush. Frank Bush obviously got a game where he called it against the Saints when Dean Pease was blindsided and hit and knocked out of that game. And things were fine by and large in that one. But so you have long-term, he's a long-term guy, obviously was defensive coordinator when the Jets a couple of years ago, Texans before that. Like, he has a lot of experience, but the linebackers have been good too. He's developed pretty well in that regard, so you're happy on that front. Troy Anderson looked pretty solid, especially towards the end of the year. That man's hits were just vicious, whether it was on special teams or just balls over the middle. That man hits hard. Troy Anderson's going to be a player, I think.
Still super raw.
Super raw. But
he has so much more room for development, too. That's the craziest thing about him.
But that's okay, because they have a lot of vets, and they're okay on that front. But Eagles defensive line coach Tracy Rocker, which I would love a lot. Titans defensive line coach was just probably my number one pick. It's a toss-up. I'm going to give my two number one picks based on who's been rumored to this point. So Terrell Williams, because you look just what they've done with Jeffrey Simmons and that defensive line over the last couple of years in Tennessee, and obviously there's a lot of overlap with Arthur Smith and the staff in Tennessee. Like, that would be a huge get and an elevation for him, go from defensive line to calling plays. And then Deshaed Townsend, the Jaguars passing game coordinator and CB's coach. Jags have been great. There is some history. They've crossed paths a little bit over the years, but those are probably my top two. Brian Flores has interviewed too. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think Flores is going to take this one. Could be wrong, but I would be surprised if he were to take the Atlanta DC job. We'll see. But I don't know. I of all the names, who fascinates you the most, Garrett?
The person who you finished with, Brian Flores. That's really? Someone. Yeah, he's a strong defensive coach. He has a very colorful background when it comes to that, like developing players, and he's coming from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and generally speaking, even if it's just a year in that system, I mean, I think that's a great position for him to be in. And if he wants to see a bigger role, I think, why not the Falcons? My concern with guys like that, so it's like, I was going through this list, and like, you have guys like Lovie Smith and Brian Flores and Vic Fangio. Those are all guys who, maybe not Vic Fangio, but the two guys before that, those are guys who are probably going to go be head coaches very soon. So, I mean, are we just trying to put a Band-Aid on this until we get our long-term guy? I mean, I know it's the NFL, and that this is just the nature of the sport, where it's like there's a lot of turnover, and that's just the way it is. But I kind of want to have a situation where the Atlanta Falcons are set up in a situation that they have the same defensive coordinator for the next couple of years. And I think that kind of needs to go into the thought process, because just how raw and how open this team is, it's going to be a lot of transition this year. And I think if we're going to go to a Vic Fangio or something like that, I know commitments only matter so much, I guess, but I want to see this guy in this role for the next 3 years, maybe 4 years, 5 years. And that's obviously a goal. Maybe it's not realistic, but that's got to be one of my drawbacks with a guy like Brian Flores, who I think is at the first opportunity, he's going to go be a head coach, because I think...
As he should.
And I'm not going to try and say that he shouldn't do that. But look, for the long-term outlook of the Atlanta Falcons, that's what I'm concerned with. And I want a guy who's going to be here long-term, and long-term NFL style. But like, Jim Schwartz is already off the list. He's the first guy who's gone and taken a job up in Cleveland. He's a bigger name. I think he's a great defensive coordinator. He's going to go be a very good up there in Cleveland. But Vic Fangio is really the guy that I want to see on this team. I don't think he's going to sign with the Atlanta Falcons, because I think he's going to go wherever Sean Payton goes.
Yeah.
Just because. It's a better system for him. It's more set up. And he can come in and just reset.
I've read that. But the problem with that is, I think it's going to depend on where Sean ends up. Because you know where he's not going to go? Back to Denver. And if Sean Payton goes to Denver, like, that's not a package deal. There's no way Vic Fangio is going back to Denver after getting fired there.
No. And I think that's the only scenario in which he would come to Atlanta. I mean, how many job openings are there right now for defensive coordinator? I mean, I knew there were a bunch for offensive coordinator.
The Dolphins, Vikings, who else is open?
Broncos. What was that, four? Five for Falcons?
I guess Cardinals, technically. Panthers, technically.
That's not technically, it is.
Well, no, because it might just, they might just promote D. Wilkes, and if they Good. Do that, they do.
That's at seven. I mean, yeah. Of those, I'd say that the Falcons are in fine situation for all of those, considering the fact that they have so much cap space and they have an opportunity to come in and mold the team day one.
Mm.
And if they take that job, I think the Atlanta Falcons are a very attractive position because you have an offense that plays a kind of style that I think a defensive coordinator would really like. It's that sort of ball control, yeah. And they'll run out the clock and long possessions.
We play Kentucky football.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
That's kind 100% of, what we do.
Yeah,
we
not exactly the last couple of years, but like the last, most of the years, but the last year or so, that not as much, but they're a little bit more high-flying. One of the reasons why they didn't win as many games this year. But
that's why they're in a lot of games. It's because they're ball control and they don't make mistakes. They don't throw picks. They're just
But they did make mistakes. That was the problem this year.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation, I guess, with Will Levis and everything. Draft conversation, which we can have, just not the second. But I think the Atlanta Falcons are an attractive option for most defensive coordinators just for those options, just for those reasons. You have an offense that plays complementary football to what they want to do in defense. And you have a lot of money. You have a lot of draft capital, too. You can form, and there are a lot of young pieces on this team that you can build around. So I think the Falcons are a very attractive place. So it's like if we can go get one of those guys, I think why wouldn't they want to come here?
That's fair. I'm curious to see which one they ultimately go with. Who's your gut tell you? Because my gut says you're not gonna like this. My gut says they're just gonna promote Frank Bush.
I don't see an internal promotion. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Like, look, he has. If they want to keep the continuity, fine. I just want to bring in someone who's a little bit more experienced, you know, like Frank Bush. Yeah. He hasn't been a defensive coordinator in 12 years, decade really. I know he was an interim defensive coordinator for the Jets, but I mean, a full-time 2 years with the Texans, it's been over a decade. And that's really his only experience. So I just want to see some guy who's like I want Vic Fangio. That's who I want. I think that's just because he carries a lot of respect in the NFL. A lot of people really like him. He has that relationship already in place with a lot of people in the staff. And he's really good, you know? And DP's talked about changing a culture. And I think that if you continue and bring in a guy who's well-respected across the league, like Vic Fangio, then I think that's just check marks across the board. And if he's available and he's willing to come here, take him.
I want Terrell Williams. I just love what he's done with Jeffrey Simmons and company in Tennessee. Like, that defensive line's been nasty, and I want a defensive line promotion where it's just bring in someone who their bread and butter is defensive line, because I am so dang tired of year in, year out being like, what are we going to do to fix this defensive line? Like, what are we going to do here? So that's where I would go. I would go defensive line and somewhere in that. Or maybe that's Rocker. Maybe that's Williams. I don't know.
I like that. I'm fine with that. Your reasoning is sound. Like, look, this has been a rocky road when it comes to defensive line play. So, look, if they can elevate that, fine. I'll take that. But, I mean, at the same time, just go get a competent defensive line coach, which I think last year the defensive line, I think, took a step forward. I think it was a better defensive line, at least, than it had been, which isn't, I guess, saying much. But it was competent. Taquan Graham, Gray Jarrett. I mean, those two guys are
good. Like, it was good players. That's how sad it is. It's like, they weren't abysmal, but they weren't good. Like, this was not a good defensive line.
When he was healthy, when Taquan Graham was healthy, I mean, he was playing well.
He was fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's a starter. He's not like a stud, but, well, I won't go there. I was at that game. That was a tough game.
Speaking of places I don't want to go, you know what's picked up a lot of steam over the last couple of weeks? Like, friend of the pod, Jarrett Bailey, did a video on this, and a lot of people are pushing this, of like, Lamar Jackson makes sense for the Falcons. Lamar Jackson does not make sense for the Falcons, and I am going to lose my mind if this is a year-over-year situation where the Falcons, like, dip their toes into the veteran quarterback market and are like, hey, we're gonna see what we can do here. Garrett, would you like to guess how many of the final eight NFL teams still alive in the playoffs did not draft their quarterback?
Of the final eight?
How many have a quarterback they did not draft?
I think they all drafted him.
They did all draft him. All eight were drafted by their own team. This is
well, the Super Bowl champion last year traded for him.
Yeah.
Not unheard of.
It's not unheard of.
It's also not a very good track record. Generally, you want the same guy in the system who's been there, and you compete more with a guy with a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, they can afford him. Will he make this team more exciting? Yes. Will he make this team better? Yes. Would this team be a playoff team with Lamar Jackson? Yes.
They might be a playoff team without him just because the AFC South is going to be so bad.
Yeah, but that was my next part.
Okay.
You're a playoff team without him.
Mm-hmm.
You have too many holes.
Mm-hmm.
Go plug those holes and figure the rest out. Desmond Ridder is good enough. Mm. He's good enough. But he's also good enough to that point where Lamar Jackson has not largely been unhealthy for the majority of his career. Well, I don't know if he's ever played a full 16 games. I think he might have. Maybe he did when he was a rookie, but that's just because he was playing. He was supplementing Joe Flacco.
Mm.
I don't think he's been healthy for a full 16 games schedule. 17 now. And I'm not too thrilled with that. If I'm going to be paying him $45 million every single year, not very thrilled with the idea that he's not going to be healthy. And that was on the young half of his career, and it's only going to get worse as it goes along. Not thrilled with that idea. However, if you have a guy like Desmond Ridder coming in and replacing him off the bench and spot starts, he'd be one of the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. But I don't think they drafted him for that reason. I think they drafted him to see what he can do as a starter. And I think he showed me enough at the last half of last year, the last four games or whatever and change that he played. I think I saw enough. I want him to be the starter, and I want them to supplement the other positions on the field because, you know, having a competent defense would be kind of nice in Atlanta for a change.
That would be a nice change. Lamar Jackson, I'm just not in. I also don't think they're going to move him. I saw this week that he's involved in the offensive coordinator search for Baltimore.
He's going to be in Baltimore. He's not getting out of Baltimore.
No.
They'll franchise tag him and he'll sign it. If he doesn't show up, let them deal with that problem. I don't want that problem here in Atlanta. I just don't want to deal with it.
We're not a quarterback away right now. That's the other part of it. It's just they're not a quarterback away.
The New York Jets can go do this. The Cleveland Browns thought they were a quarterback away, and they missed the playoffs.
And also, Deshaun was not good.
He looked bad. Objectively bad.
Hate to see
and
it.
And he looked rusty. I think he'll come back and he'll be fine next year. But
let's hope not.
we'll save that part. But look, I think if he's going to get traded, Atlanta's going to be in the market for him. It's Arthur Blank. He's a sexy player who's just, he does a lot of things and he's fun to watch and he'll sell tickets and uniforms, whatever.
Mm.
He'll go to New York. I think New York will pay more to go get him. They'll send a small fortune, King's ransom, for Lamar Jackson to something I don't think that the Falcons are going to want to match if they know it's good for them. But
yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm not really worried about it. I don't think they're going to go down that road.
I don't think it's going to go that far. No, but I said the same thing about the Deshaun Watson thing, which he was all but a Falcon. He'd effectively signed the only thing he hadn't done is sign the contract.
Man. Well, lucked out there.
Yeah, for real.
Also, I think Ridder showed enough. He got better week over week, and I think it's enough where, like I said in the group chat with our friend of yesteryear, Max Markovich, he's our Alex Smith. I don't think Desmond Ridder is ever going to be a top five quarterback. I don't think he ever has that kind of, what we're seeing in the AFC with Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes being the final four. Ridder's never going to be that guy. I don't think it's just not there.
He's Jimmy Garoppolo. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I even think he can be better than that. I think because he can move
Alex
around
Smith,
a bit more.
Alex Smith also was a number one overall pick. Jimmy Garoppolo
is quite
literally. I don't
think Alex Smith is anymore. If we did that draft now, I don't know. I don't know where Alex Smith goes in a redraft or based on what we saw from him at Utah, what we know about quarterbacks now. I don't know if he'd still go
number one overall, but I mean, he was also drafted for potential and then had five different offensive coordinators.
Yeah, he was kind of
ruined early years. He got ruined, and then he goes and gets Andy Reid and has a resurgence. Well, really, Jim Harbaugh
added. He won a bunch of regular season games, and people were like, oh, he can't win the big one. And it's well, it's just bites the apple. It's just if he was still the Chiefs quarterback all these years later,
They would have won.
They would have gotten one with Alex Smith.
Like, they would have won a Super Bowl,
right? Like Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Like get hot. Like things happen. Like I think you can win a Super Bowl with Desmond Ridder as your quarterback. I think he's smart enough. He's ball control. I think he'll have a good completion percentage. I think he's older. I think he is just he won everywhere he's been.
He's a pro.
Yeah, like
he's a pro.
I want Desmond Ridder to get the full shot, and I want to surround Desmond Ridder with a high octane offense, run first mentality, great offensive line. And just kick the shit out of people week in, week out. Like, that is what I want this Falcons team to be. And I think they still just have a lot of work to do on the defensive line. I think they have a lot of work to do in the secondary. And I think they have a lot of work to do at wideout, like, which is kind of wild to think. But Calvin Ridley is going to be playing with Trevor Lawrence next year. And there was a lot of Elamide Zaccheaus still on this Falcons roster this year. And it's just Drake London, home run, great player. He's going to be fun to watch for years. Kyle Pitts, we're now starting to wonder, like, what's this going to look like? But he's still a guy.
When he comes back healthy, I think we're going to have a different opinion of him. We have a guy. Look, people thought that Drake London was verging on bust year one, which obviously wild overreaction. Because once you plug in Desmond Ridder, a guy who's actually going to throw the ball down the field, unlike the other guy who will remain nameless. This guy throws the ball down the field, and he hits his targets more often than not. And I think we saw a massive improvement from Drake London. And I think it's the same thing that we're going to see from an uber-talented Kyle Pitts. Mm-hmm. This Falcons offense, I don't think they may draft a guy. I know I've done a lot of those mock drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like one of the that fell out of, like a Zay Flowers if he drops from Boston College. Maybe if there's that kid out of SMU, if he drops to maybe the third round. Ideal scenario for the Atlanta Falcons, go get like a future playmaker, another young guy, supplement him with Elamide Zaccheaus, who's a very strong number three option as far as wideouts go, stick him in the slot. I think then you have an offense right there. That's a full-fledged offense, and maybe go get like a veteran center out on the market. I don't know who its centers or offensive linemen are out there for free agency.
They might need a right tackle.
No, he'll get franchise tagged.
Do you think so?
I'm confident that Caleb McGarry is going to get a franchise tag.
Okay.
I think that just makes too much sense. And I think Terry Fontenot he thinks with his head a little bit more than Thomas Dimitroff does or did. Mm. And that's the logical decision. I think prove it one more time. He was very good this year. And at least according to his previous years, comparatively speaking, Lindstrom's about to get the bag. Jake Matthews just restructured his deal to open up some money. He's going to be the left tackle. Caleb McGarry is going to get the franchise tag. Left guard, Elijah Wilkinson showed me enough that if he can stay healthy, that's fine. Maybe they go draft a center guard combo, somebody who can play both positions, and maybe go get another veteran, and that's your center and guard situation. Falcons are pretty much, at that point, set on offense. Now that you just funnel money and draft capital into the defense. I think that's a winning scenario right there. And the Atlanta Falcons can flip from, if they won 7 games with this roster, I'm confident they can win 10 to 11 games next year, especially in this NFC South. With all the turmoil that's going on down here, they can win 10 or 11 games next year and push their way into the playoffs.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if they'll advance past like a wild card weekend or anything like that. I'm not going to go that far.
We got to see what they do this offseason, like, and who they draft. Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll see.
They could.
They have a lot of money to spend.
Yes. That's a lot of money. Sometimes that kind of money goes to your head, and then you start overpaying for a Jadeveon Clowney or something and pay him too much money. Then, would it surprise me if Clowney comes plays in Atlanta? No.
It would surprise me.
I don't know what that would cost, but we'll see. Would it surprise
really
me?
He quit. No. Like, there was some really weird stuff that happened at the end of
his... It was a weird situation that
came out
there.
I don't know if
I
want Jadeveon Clowney.
But that's also... He's played so much losing football. He's been on so many bad football teams that... I don't even know if I want him, truthfully, because he's a superstar talent who has been on losing teams and has been a negative influence in a lot of places. And I'm not going to go that far to say he's the problem or whatever, but sometimes when you bring in that sort of mentality, it doesn't...
That's like
really
a last resort for me. Like, if we whip on some other bigger names, and it's like, all right, we'll circle back with Jadeveon Clowney. I don't know. I'm interested to see where they go.
One thing I will say, that this is the most important 2-year stretch, at least since 2007, 2008, the way I'm looking at it. Because you have 2007 was a transformational year, for better or for worse. You lose Mike Vick, Bobby Petrino bolts for Arkansas. I mean, we saw what happened there. It was a dumpster fire. Year two, you go get your quarterback, you get your head coach, you get a running back, competent offense with Roddy White on the outside. They look very good. They go to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this year, last offseason, I should say, Matt Ryan, we separate with him. We eat all of those bad contracts, absorb it. Still, they won 7 games. That's the difference. You have your head coach already in place. You have a quarterback already in place. But you have all this money. You have all this draft capital. You have 5 picks within your first 113. It's pretty important. And lots of potential this year. And I think that this is a playoff team next year. I think it can be, depending on the moves that they make. But I'm optimistic.
I am too. I think they're moving in the right direction. I'm okay. Like, I'm not freaking out about where they're going.
I feel better about them than I do the rest of the NFC South. I'll tell you that much.
Absolutely.
I'll guarantee you that.
The Braves offseason, kind of wrapping up here with pitchers and catchers reporting very soon.
20 days.
20 days. 3 more offseason predictions, though, from Chase Earl over at Sports Talk ATL that I wanted to run by you. So his 3, and I want you to tell me which ones you think is most likely to least likely for you. Ian Anderson wins the 5th and final spot in the rotation. The Braves try Vaughn Grissom out in left field. And the Braves at least make one more meaningful signing. How would you rank those 3? What do you think is the most likely to least likely?
Define meaningful.
I guess it's probably like another starter, or they address left field and make a trade where they're like, we're doing something else. We're not running it back with Ozuna and Rosario as an option. We're not just going with Kevin Pillar on a minor league deal and whoever the other guy they signed.
All 3 would not surprise me, truthfully. I could see all 3 potentially happening. I kind of like Vaughn Grissom in left field more than I do at shortstop.
So just, what do you do at short, though, if that happens?
But that's the thing. And I think he's capable of playing shortstop. If he's capable of doing it, there's no other real option. At least Eddie Rosario can play competent defense sometimes, you know?
But, like, you can't put Ozuna out in the field anymore. Like, he is a full-time DH.
No. That has been an unmitigated disaster for the Atlanta Braves. Mm-hmm. But cutting him would also be a meaningful thing, you know? Like, did you say signing, or was it like a meaningful move?
Meaningful signing.
Okay, well, I guess I wouldn't count there. But none of them would surprise me. Ian Anderson, I could actually see. I would be very surprised if he doesn't make that 5th spot. I would actually go other side of that. Yeah.
Over Bryce?
No, I would. No, I'd be a little surprised. Give me a little hesitation there for a second. But no.
Soroka doesn't start in that scenario, too.
Yeah, well, I will believe Soroka when I see it. Like, that's just where I am. Would I love to see Mike Soroka? No question. I would love to see Mike Soroka. Ian Anderson also has World Series starts under his belt. He has meaningful postseason experience. He is a veteran's veteran at this point. He is young, has so much potential still. People think that we've seen the most of, like, the max of what Ian Anderson can do. I'm not convinced that we have. I think he's an elite number 5. Maybe he is a solid number 3. Because we saw that at times. We saw what he could be. And I think he just got into his head a little bit too much. And he just needed to hit the reset button. We'll see how he reacts to that. Because pitching is so mentally based. There's so much that goes into that. Just your confidence. My concern when he got sent down was that it was going to rattle him a little too much. And he was never going to come back. Well, he never came back. And that concerned me a little bit. But he hit the reset button. He's been at Wake Forest all offseason, pitching and trying to hit the reset button on everything and his confidence, his mechanics, everything else. I think he's doing the right things. I'd be very surprised just based off of the fact that he already has all that experience. He was on the opening day roster last year. He was on the World Series roster the year before that. So I'd be very surprised if he wasn't in this spring rotation to start the year. Will he stay there? That's a different question. Will he start there? I think he will.
I wonder, too, who's in the best interest as the starter as that fifth guy? Like, of the three, who do you think it helps the Braves the most if they win this job? Of those three, Anderson, Bryce, or...
Bryce Elder. Elder, Ian Anderson, and Mike Soroka.
Yeah, who do you think benefits the Braves the most if they win the fifth spot in spring training?
Mike Soroka.
Hmm.
Just because if Mike Soroka comes out and wins that job, that means he's finally back.
Right. And that rotation is pretty nasty.
And then all of a sudden, like, he was the best pitcher on that staff standing next to Max Fried. He was the best pitcher on that staff. And that was a gut-wrenching loss when this team lost Mike Soroka. Mm. Him coming back, and if he's able to replicate what he was doing, that's similar. I'm not going to compare it like to like. That's like when Ronald Acuña is going to be coming back this year, and he's going to come in and make an immediate dominant impact. I think Ronald Acuña is going to have a resurgent year this year, assuming that he trusts that knee. The Atlanta Braves will be better this year if Ronald Acuña regresses to what he actually is. Ozzie Albies coming back to this lineup. I think this Braves team's going to be very good, but I'm getting kind of sidetracked here. Mike Soroka, though, I would compare his comeback to that of Ronald Acuña, whereas he's an extremely talented player who was still not at his max capacity, and we'd seen flashes of it at times. And he's a Cy Young-level pitcher. We saw that from him. He was still young. He was still really raw. What is he, still 24 years old? 25 years old? He has the whole, like, the ceiling is way up here. So if he comes back and wins that five spot, I'd be very, very happy with that.
I think if Ian Anderson wins, then you're in some trouble. Like, I think they probably want
trouble.
Him to
I
win
the trouble.
I mean, it just means that Soroka's not right, and you probably have to. Okay. The ship has sailed there, and then you're like, okay, Bryce is probably not a guy, and we probably have to move on from him. He's in that Colby Allard spot where he's like an odd man out. Where it's like, if it's not now, it's not probably not going to happen for Bryce. I don't know. My gut says Bryce wins it though, of the three.
Yeah. If Bryce Elder wins it, I will be probably the most discouraged. He's a good pitcher.
I don't think he
has a long-term future with the Atlanta Braves.
Would you hate it if they brought in Mike Minor? He's still out there. A reunion with Mike Lefty.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't the feel NL great. Charlie Morton against... is the only vet, really. And Charlie Morton was not himself last year.
I actually had a we had a conversation with Alex Anthopoulos in November after the season obviously ended, and he had a very interesting explanation for that decision. It's basically they're just buying out his option year and extending it. That's essentially all it was. So it wasn't really a difference from anything else as like a money standpoint. So that part made me feel a little bit better. Part two was, if you look at his best seasons, it's when he has a full off season to prepare. So, like, he goes through the full situation where he rests, he gears up, he gets going, and then he hits full go by the time opening day comes around. He hasn't been able to do that. The 2 years that he struggled, 2020, obviously you have COVID and everything else, and they shut everything down. And then last year, after he's coming off of the broken leg. When he is not having to deal with all of those issues and those constraints, dude is an elite number two. He's a top-end pitcher. And I was not – he still has the swing and miss capabilities. We saw that in the second half of the season once he was actually able to get ramped up and fully in to pitching mode. He still has swing and miss. And I think that that's really all you need from him on a game-to-game basis. He lacked the consistency that I really wanted to see. And that's why I'm a little nervous on the deal. But it did confirm a few things to me that, well, Alex Anthopoulos knows what he's doing here, and he knows why he made that decision. And I'm going to defer to Alex Anthopoulos pretty universally. It's a lot of money, and I would have liked to have seen that some of that money go elsewhere, like left field or maybe shortstop. But at the end of the day, it's like if you have a guy who can come in and be a steady everyday pitcher every 5 days, I think that's a very valuable thing to have. A guy who can go six innings, maybe seven. That's very important for this team.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder if they're done. And if it does go awry, they just wait it out and they see what the, how this just goes in spring training, and then they'll address it depending on how everybody looks. So yeah. I think that's something to monitor at the very least. Last thing on the Hawks. So the Hawks have a winning streak.
Healthy Hawks, man. I told you they got a run in them.
The healthy Hawks. And look, they it's so interesting because Jalen Johnson obviously not in the rotation right now, and watching the Mavs earlier this week, and poor DeAndre Hunter, just no answer for Luka Doncic. Like, Luka was doing some just ridiculous stuff to DeAndre Hunter in the first quarter of that game, where I think Luka had like 16 or something, but like
19.
I was just only watching DeAndre on Luka, and I'm like, this is DeAndre's not a small dude, and Luka just makes him look like a cornerback on a left tackle. Like, it's just not really fair what Luka was doing to him.
That's a little unfair. That's a little unfair.
Go back and look at it. DeAndre looks just like a tall toothpick next to Luka, and it's just he has no chance keeping up with him. And then Luka doesn't score, I think, in the second quarter, and they figured some stuff out. But
who did they put on him in the second quarter? Was that when they put Bogey?
No, it was Capella, I think. I think Capella was on Luka a bunch in the second
quarter.
They
switched something up. It's like, I was like following Brad Rolland was live tweeting, and like they changed up some of the defensive formations, and they would push up to try and stop the when they were pushing into the paint. They'd have John Collins push up, and I don't know what exactly it was. They explained all of it, but
yeah.
they made a defensive change in the middle of the game.
Which is coaching. Nice.
That was nice. and it worked.
They're playing really good basketball, and like I said in the group chat, where this is like, I'm not saying they're going to be the Celtics of last year, but when the Hawks have their eight, they are a really good basketball team. When they have their eight, when we don't have to play the Holidays, when we don't have to play Jalen Johnson, when you don't have to play anyone else other than John Collins, Onyeka Okongwu, who is playing out of his mind and has really blossomed over the last week or so without Capella, and Capella coming off the bench, and it's actually been better. And Trey and Onyeka's chemistry has gotten a lot better too. Their pick and roll has been fantastic. Onyeka's just more active than Capella at this point, and also will conserve Capella a lot more if he's a bench guy and he's not asked to do as much as he was having to do before Onyeka was starting to break out here. But it's Onyeka, JC, DeAndre, DeJounte, Trey, Bogey, AJ, and that's it, and Capella. When you have those eight and you just mix and match who's on the floor of those eight, it's a great thing. When like you can stagger DeJounte and Trey, and Bogey's the only guy that you're staggering in there because Dellen Wright's gone, and Aaron Holiday is just not he's just not good. The Holidays are just not good and borderline unplayable. And you look at it and you're like, this all works. AJ Griffin is a home run draft pick. Like, he is a really, really good player.
Grand
His
slam.
Jumper is so smooth. He is a player. Like, I'm not saying he should start, but I'm also, we're getting to that point where I'm like, are we sure he doesn't belong? Because it takes him a while to enter the game. And you're like, the offense was working against Dallas, so that didn't bother me as much. But I wonder if at a certain point, because the offense has not been great all year long, that like AJ is, the offense is just better when he's in the game, and he's a great shooter all over the court. And he's great. I'm all in on AJ Griffin. But win streak, what's been the biggest change for you, Garrett?
They're in the second half of the season officially. Mm-hmm. What was that? 4 games ago that they entered the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
they're officially 4-0 in the second half.
It's nice.
It is the most consistently irritating theme with the Atlanta Hawks, just because they decide that they want to play good basketball in the second half of seasons. They've done it now, assuming that this holds, the last 3 years in a row, they play their best basketball. The part that makes me feel a little bit better is the fact that they didn't play bad basketball in the first half. They were just average. Last year, they were objectively terrible in the first half of the season. This year, they were just average, and they have a very strong launching point. And I think against the Mavs on Wednesday, we really you hinted at it, where you kind of said it. They had their 8-man, and we saw a playoff game. Like, that's what the playoff rotation would look like. And kudos to Jalen Johnson for he kind of had to come in and play a couple more minutes than I think Nate McMillan was really expecting, just due to the foul trouble that DeAndre Hunter was getting into. But kudos to him. He came in and played well. Wasn't magnificent, but he was good, especially when he's coming in cold and the way that it just sort of happened. I mean, yeah, look, good. It was good enough. And the way the Hawks battled through that third quarter, tough third quarter, whistle was not their friend in this game. DeAndre Hunter battled through foul trouble. I don't think it was quite as pronounced as the way you saw it, but it's like, look, you're playing Luka Doncic. He's probably one of the best players in the NBA right now, if not the best, as far as like how he's playing right now.
Was he a Hawk?
You play a guy like that, he's gonna make you look silly more often than not. The way he was able to kind of reset on Luka and play better basketball, kudos to him for that. I'll look at the positive there. Like, DeAndre Hunter as a whole, I mean, he's been better. He hasn't been as good as what I wanted to see at times this year. But for the most part, he's doing what we need him to do. Like, he's playing three and he's playing the four defensively, effectively. He's largely average when he's shooting the basketball, which is all I want from him. I need him to stop turning the ball over so much. But then after that, it's like he's been pretty good outside of that. I mean, he's justified that contract. And he's been healthy. He's healthy. He's third on the Hawks in minutes played. I will take that all the way. I no question about it. Because the best ability, especially for DeAndre Hunter, is availability. And he, for the most part, in his career, he hasn't been available.
Yeah,
he has this year. And he's shown that he is a largely above average player on offense and a solid player on defense. Fine. That's good for me. Because when I have two ball-dominant guys like DeJounte and Trey, catch the ball, shoot the ball, make your shot. That's all I want on offense from him. And I'm seeing that. So I'm happy. But I liked what I saw. I think that this is a big game tonight against the Knicks. The Hornets tomorrow. My question really comes down to, is Bogey going to be healthy? He's played, 19 consecutive minutes at one point in the second half. We'll see how that goes here in this game. I think he's going to miss one of those games, so I think we'll see a little bit more Jalen Johnson as they kind of push the lineups around. It's that or it's the holidays. So I know you're not happy with any of those options, but I'll take Jalen Johnson and his development over any of the Holiday brothers. But
you know who I would take? Dylan Wright.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, we've seen that one. Also, Trey. Yeah. I want to see if Trey's going to play. I don't know if Trey's going to play both nights of this back-to-back. I would imagine he plays tonight against the Knicks because he loves playing the Knicks. Yeah. And then he's not going to play tomorrow.
In Atlanta or in New York tonight?
Both are in Atlanta. Okay. Yeah. I was going to buy tickets, but then they're like $60.
What are they wearing tonight? Do you know what uniform?
No, I don't know.
Okay. They're all good. I don't know if they're wearing the peach one, the peach date night, or it's a...
We'll see.
Yeah, I think the thing, too, is just... I don't know who gets moved to this group. Like, I guess it's John Collins is still the only one who makes sense to get moved, and I don't know what his value is right now. Because everyone's value around the league is skewed, where you see, like, the Spurs want two first-round picks for Jakob Poeltl, and you're like, all right. When you look at just what teams are asking for just rotation guys all around the league, you're like, the market's not real right now. So I don't know what it will ultimately cost, but I have two trades, and I want you to tell me which one do you think you would prefer. Crowder for Collins, straight up. Like, that's just one, just a swap. Gives Phoenix help. Makes sense for both sides, I think. The other one, though, that I think intrigues me more, that I think actually would help the Hawks a lot more, to two for one. The Wizards are just, they're not going to be a playing team.
You're going to say Kyle Kuzma, aren't you?
I'm going to say Kyle Kuzma and my old friend, Dellen Wright. Like, that, the salaries work. So I would flip John Collins for those two. Kyle Kuzma, I think he'll only got one more year on his deal after this. Dellen Wright, obviously a bunch of success with this team last year. He's kind of bogey insurance with the injury stuff there. There could be lineups where Max, this is his dream scenario of DeJounte and Dellen Wright sharing a backcourt together for stretches of games. We're just...
That would be fun.
That's my trade, is I want Kuzma and Dellen Wright for John Collins. The shooting with Kuzma and the spacing, I think, will be better. You have to do something about the offense, because the offense is not good enough right now.
Yeah.
As currently constructed.
How is he defensively?
not great. But when you have DeJounte and DeAndre and Onyeka on the floor,
you'd need Onyeka and Clint Capella to step up, but you'd have a lot more speed. Honestly, that kind of makes sense.
You don't hate that, right?
You'd have a nine man. You have to push to a nine man rotation.
Yeah, but I would do that. And also, it might be an eight because someone gets injured.
Yeah.
I don't hate that.
That makes a lot of sense. I didn't realize his numbers from three were this good.
I'm telling you, this is the trade. I think if
you're 34%?
Yeah. If you're the Hawks, this is the trade.
I mean, he's not going to get that much volume. He's not getting 7.5 shots a game.
No, but
I can guarantee you he's not going to
that. That man is fine but playing, like moving look, the corner.
If he takes five.
Yeah.
If he takes five.
Three corner threes a night.
Like, look, actually, if you look, I'm looking at his numbers right now. When he averages 5.5, mm-hmm. he has 36.6%, 5.5, 36%, and 34.1%.
Hmm.
Fine. I'm good with that. If he averages five threes a game, mm-hmm. that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
You know that it kind of makes sense. But I don't know. You definitely downgrade at the power forward position.
It's a downgrade in this scheme.
But the thing is, it might make more sense within the flow of this offense.
Yeah. And I think Kuzma's...
Because I think one of the biggest things we've seen specifically from John Collins in this team, mm-hmm. they're 4-0, and John Collins is hitting his shots. Mm-hmm. So is there a confidence that this is the John Collins that we're going to have, which may happen? I kind of do want to see another depth point guard, like a true point guard, mm-hmm. like DeLon Wright. That trade actually makes a lot of sense to me. I think it makes sense to me. You downgrade at power forward, but he fits the offense a little bit. Yeah, all right.
You're in.
You've convinced me.
I've talked you through this.
Yeah, and... Does the money work?
Yes.
Okay.
It's my favorite trade machine move. That's what I do. And I also think John would like it because John would be partnered with Bradley
Beal.
Number one. And it's those two.
Like, two.
He's the number two there. Clear number two. Him and Porzingis actually would not be a terrible fit, I don't think, as a front court duo. I think they would mix and match. I think he'd be okay.
I think that actually makes too much sense. So
he went to Wake.
There's no way it happened.
North Carolina, not far from... Virginia. I don't know. That's my move. If I'm
it makes sense. Field. It makes sense. We think through it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was this crazy on offense. He's up to 21 points a game this year.
I'll tell you.
I mean, his usage is he's got a lot of height. What's his usage rate though? Where do I find that?
Where are you on?
Oh, I'm on Pro Basketball Reference.
You just scroll down a little bit further.
Where'd it go?
He is. Let's see.
This is great radio. Sorry.
No, this is good. He's 28%.
Okay.
Which is pretty high.
That is pretty
like,
high.
MVP, like Trey, down to like for instance, 15, for reference, right? It's like always around 31. Like Trey is only around 31.
But he's a. Yeah. So that's pretty high usage. That concerns me a bit.
But, like, that's just not sustainable. Like, that's not... You can't play winning basketball when that's your... When that's the usage rate for Kuz. Like, that's just not...
Kuzma. But I think Kyle Kuzma is also a lot more willing to come in and play kind of a backseat role.
He's shooting 43% on quarter threes.
Beautiful.
That's
all
thing,
I want
is,
from
like,
him.
He's 43%
That's all I want
threes.
From him.
Like, if that's his role and he's good with it, like, that's just... Bread and butter. When Trey and Yeka pick
come
and
in
roll.
And do one thing, two things well. He hits his open shots. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to create for himself. We have
don't need that.
Three guys who can do for that, plus DeLon Wright in that move. I like that move.
There you go.
Kind of makes a lot of sense. I'm on board because I don't think John Collins is going to be here.
No.
I just don't think. I don't think it's tenable at this point.
No.
And this team needs to win games. The only thing that I could see, one of the big things I could see detracting from that move is the fact that now we're winning a couple basketball games. And if we continue to win games over the next 2 weeks, Tony Ressler is going to stick his fat hands into the middle of this again and block deals.
I don't know.
He did it with Paul Millsap a couple years ago. Wasn't a good basketball team, but he did it because, well, the team's winning a couple of games, but it turned out to be just an enigma. And they flamed out. I don't know. Whenever owners meddle in the operations of game management, team management, almost never works. It almost never works. And I never want to see that. It's always almost always a bad sign, especially in the NBA. More the NBA more than most. Worked for Jerry Jones for a few years in the NFL, but
yeah.
We are where we are.
Garrett, what can the good folks check out from you all over the internet this week?
Another big weekend for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, big recruiting weekend. So we'll be catching up with some recruits, and I will be posting some content as the weekend goes on. Hawks in action, of course, so we'll be in studio reacting to all that good stuff. So got a couple shows this weekend, so catch me in 92.9 The Game all weekend long.
There you go. Garrett, always a pleasure. Thank you, and I will talk to you next week.
Let's do it.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Chase, I think I'm going to hear more about you. I really do. I think you've got a way about you, but you're interviewing, mm-hmm. your pleasantness, you're smart. So I think I'm going to hear big things about you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.